This is Free Speech Radio News for Thursday, October 11th, 2007. From Eugene, Oregon, I'm Jess Burns. In today's program, the U.S. government may not be prosecuting Blackwater, but the private security company now faces a lawsuit by Iraqis injured and killed by the firm in September. Residents of the California city of Palmdale rally against what they call unfair treatment of African American students. And the privatization of education is not sitting well with many British parents and teachers. All this and more, but first, these news headlines.
I'm Shannon Young with today's headlines. The Pentagon is reportedly considering a shift of Marine Corps personnel away from Iraq and into Afghanistan. A New York Times report published today indicates that the Department of Defense is mulling a plan to put the U.S. Army in charge of the situation on the ground in Iraq while boosting the Marines' role in Afghanistan. The article cited multiple anonymous sources from closed-door meetings, but Pentagon officials have yet to publicly confirm the report. The Federal Communications Commission has announced new restrictions on the number of radio station license applications that any one entity can make. And Illusionol has the story.
The FCC decided to limit the number of non-commercial radio license applications it can accept from a single organization after receiving more than 10,000 comments in favor of the restrictions. Supporters of the application caps hope they will prevent big-budget tax-exempt organizations from burying the applications of smaller groups in an avalanche of paperwork. The limits will prevent scenarios like the one in which the Educational Media Foundation, a Christian broadcasting group, filed 800 applications at once. Prometheus Radio Project organizer Libby Reinisch considers the measure a victory for grassroots media.
The FCC, by taking this measure to limit speculation in these licenses, has improved the chance that there will be a diverse applicant pool of local, community-based nonprofits who will be better able to meet the broadcast needs of their particular communities.
The FCC will open an application period next week for non-commercial full-power stations. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Andalou Janol in New York City.
Members of the United Auto Workers are back at their jobs today after a short-lived strike against Chrysler. The walkouts that affected Chrysler plants across the country yesterday lasted a mere 6 hours before contract negotiators hammered out a tentative agreement. Observers expect a deal similar to the one reached with General Motors last month. In other labor news, nearly 5,000 nurses in Northern California are in the second day of a two-day strike against 15 hospitals. Kelly Ramirez has more from Oakland.
Nurses represented by the California Nurses Association have walked out of hospitals belonging to the Sutter chain in the San Francisco Bay Area. They are also striking against two hospitals from the Fremont Rideout chain in the Sacramento area, where nurses are seeking their first contracts. CNA spokesperson Chuck Idelson, speaking from a picket line, outlined the issues.
The issues are staffing and other patient care concerns to make sure that patients get the care they need when they need it. There's also concerns about Sutter proposals to reduce health care coverage for its registered nurses. And we're also concerned about maintaining emergency and hospital care for a number of communities, including San Francisco.
A spokesperson for one of the hospitals said the real issue is the union's desire for a master contract covering the entire Sutter chain that would give the union much more bargaining clout than contracts with individual hospitals. Although the nurses have called for only a two-day walkout, some of the hospitals have signed contracts for replacement nurses that will leave the strikers locked out for up to 3 more days. For FSRN, I'm Kelia Ramirez.
Indigenous groups from the Peruvian Amazon are calling on the government to respect international treaties that give tribes sovereignty over territory currently occupied by multinational oil and gas projects. Pamela Cueva reports from Lima.
The president of the Interethnic Association of Development of the Peruvian Rainforest, Alberto Pisango, says the Peruvian government's support of gas projects on indigenous land violates Convention 169 of the International Labor Organization and the United Nations Agenda 21 policy. The two laws relate to indigenous self-determination and their right to participate in sustainable development projects within their territory. Pisango says the Spanish company Repsol and U.S.-based Barrett Oil have left a legacy of pollution in Amazonian communities.
These indigenous brothers have been condemned to die because they have lead and cadmium in their blood, and the government is doing nothing to resolve these problems.
members of the Inter-Ethnic Association of Development of the Peruvian Rainforest will have an audience with the Inter-American Commission on Human Rights in Washington this Friday to denounce the extent of contamination present in their previously pristine homelands. The indigenous representative hoped the human rights body will convince the Peruvian government to recognize their fundamental rights over the private profits of multinational energy corporations. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Pamela Cueva with Alfredo Cuadros from Lima, Peru.
A report released today has, for the first time, quantified the economic impact of war on Africa. Samuel Okoya reports from Lagos.
Titled Africa's Missing Billions, the report puts the cost of the continent's 15 years of armed conflicts at nearly $300 billion. The organizations that compiled the report, International Action Network on Small Arms, Oxfam International, and Safe World, found that a war or insurgency shrinks an African economy by an average of 15%. Their statistics indicate that Africa loses an average of $18 billion a year due to armed conflicts. More than 95% of the assault rifles used in the conflicts came from outside the continent. The authors of the report are calling for an arms trade treaty to regulate international arms transfers and to prevent those that could result in serious violations of international humanitarian or human rights law. For Free Speech Radio News, this is Sam Olukoya in Lagos.
And those are today's headlines. I'm Shannon Young.
Pressure is mounting on the Bush administration to take punitive action against private security contractors who commit crimes in Iraq. Since last month's deadly shooting incident in a Baghdad traffic circle, Blackwater USA has been the focus of efforts to hold private security contractors accountable, and now the company has been hit with a lawsuit filed in a U.S. court. Hiba Dewu has the story.
The lawsuit filed against Blackwater USA today in Washington, D.C. federal court accuses the private security contractors of committing extrajudicial killing and war crimes. The suit calls on the court to hold Blackwater liable for claims of assault and battery, wrongful death, intentional and negligent infliction of emotional stress, and negligent hiring, training, and supervision. Michael Ratner is the president of the Center for Constitutional Rights, a nonprofit organization that brought the lawsuit along with two private law firms. Ratner says it is crucial to litigate this case in the U.S. judicial system.
Under the U.S. government's agreement with Iraq, there's nothing Iraq can do about Blackwater, and there's nothing the U.S. seems willing to do officially against Blackwater. So the only really way in which people who are killed by groups like Blackwater are to get any kind of serious compensation is by these kind of lawsuits, and this is the first effort to do so.
The lawsuit seeks punitive damages and monetary compensation for the victims of a deadly shooting last month in Baghdad traffic circle. Supervisors and witnesses to the September 16th shooting say Blackwater bodyguards accompanying a diplomatic convoy randomly opened fire on civilians without provocation. The shooting killed 17 people, wounded many others, and led the Iraqi government to announce its intent to ban the private security contractors from operating in Iraq. A police officer who was at the scene that day, clearing the road for the convoy, said it was leaving a secured military area, driving on the wrong side of the road through part of a traffic circle and headed in the direction of the airport. Baghdad resident Adib Abbas travels to work every day along the airport road, the street frequently used by private security convoys.
When people see them in the street, they get scared more than they will have when they see American forces because they shoot people without notice. Once I saw a family in a car getting shot at when they didn't stop. The driver in the car just didn't see them and wasn't trying to pass them anyway. They are extremely arrogant.
The Pentagon has signed contracts with tens of millions of dollars with the private security firms like Blackwater, Armor Group, Control Risk Group, and Hart Group. Blackwater's most recent contract, which took effect this month, is worth $95 million. The Iraqi Interior Ministry has documented numerous cases of Blackwater shootings, resulting in a total of 195 deaths. Despite such evidence, the Iraqi government has been unable to prosecute the guards due to the little-known immunity clause imposed during the time in which U.S. envoy Paul Bremer directly ruled Iraq through a provisional government. Abu Ahmed, not his real name, is one of the many Iraqis frustrated with the impunity granted to private security contractors.
What most bugs me as an Iraqi citizen, and what's most annoying, is that these guys are put in a situation where they cannot be held accountable for what they did. There's no legal background for holding them accountable. This, in my opinion, is the worst thing, even worse than the crime they did.
Blackwater has said its employees responded normally on September 16th to an insurgent attack on a convoy. The company has issued no apology for the civilian deaths. The United Nations mission in Iraq today called for prosecution of security contractors who committed crimes and urged U.S. authorities to hold companies accountable for employees who kill civilians. The State Department is reportedly re-evaluating its use of private guards in Iraq, an action which could have a major impact on Blackwater. This is Hibe Dawood for FSRN.
Both the U.S. and Turkey have caused an escalation in tensions between the two countries. Turkey is signaling its intention to mount attacks against Kurds living across their border with northern Iraq, and a U.S. congressional panel has approved a measure that would call atrocities the Ottoman Empire committed nearly 100 years ago genocide, FSRN's Leanne Caldwell reports.
The Armenian people have been pushing for recognition of genocide for decades, but the Turkish government does not want to be placed in a very small category of governments that label applies. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi says she'll move forward with the legislation by bringing it to the full House for a vote.
Genocide is taking place now in Darfur. It did within not such in recent memory in Rwanda. So as long as there is genocide, there is need to speak out against it.
Even though relations between the two countries have been hardening since September 11, 2001, for the most part, the U.S. and Turkey have a crucial alliance. The U.S. promotes Turkey as a democratic Muslim country, and their location is strategic for the U.S. as a bridge between Europe and the Middle East and between Europe and Russia. Most urgently for the U.S., though, Turkey allows full partnership of their military bases, which the U.S. uses for loading, supplying, and fueling for the Iraq War. After the resolution emerged from the House Foreign Relations Committee Wednesday, the Turkish government was furious. They threatened limiting U.S. access to their bases and possibly shutting off all access to their largest base in southern Iraq. Thursday, they recalled their U.S. ambassador from Washington, but insisting that it's just temporary. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi disregarded any of Turkey's threats.
This isn't about the government, the Erdogan government. This is about the Ottoman Empire.
Fearing the consequences, President Bush is vigorously advising Congress against this genocide legislation.
This passage would do great harm to our relations with a key ally in NATO and in the global war on terror.
The House of Representatives has brought the matter of the 1915 Armenian genocide multiple times in the past decades, and it's always controversial. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi says now is as good of time as any.
And for 20 years, people have been saying the same thing. Because of their strategic location and our relationship, we couldn't do it then. Then after that came Gulf War I. Then in the Clinton years, it was the overflights and the pipeline. And now it's the they're saying the Gulf War II, why do it now? Well, because now there's never a good time. And all of us in the Democratic leadership have supported, reiterating Americans' acknowledgement of a genocide.
Also exacerbating tensions between the U.S. and Turkey, Turkey is moving toward an attack of sovereignty-seeking Kurds in northern Iraq. Last night, Turkish warplanes approached the Iraq border, essentially opening up a second front of the war in Iraq. Tensions between the Turkish and the Kurdish Workers' Party have been escalating since 2004, and last week the Kurdish Workers' Party killed 30 Turkish security. The U.S. is publicly trying to persuade Turkey against any sort of action, as it could be another major setback for the U.S. The U.S. government fears further destabilization in the most stable part of Iraq. The Bush administration fears this Armenian resolution will prompt the Turkish government to ignore any advice the U.S. provides. Henry Barkey is a professor of Middle East Studies at Lehigh University and scholar of Turkey. He says both countries will lose out if their relationship dissolves.
In the short term, I mean, the Turks can do more damage to us than we can do to them. In the longer run, it actually is worse for the Turks. The short-term problems will have to do with the supply of American troops in Iraq and Afghanistan. But in the longer run, the Turkish government, I mean, and here we have to make to distinguish between the Turkish government and the Turkish military to some extent. The Turkish government is in greater need of U.S. support than is the military, maybe, even though the military gets all its arms from the United States. Politically, our support for Turkish democracy is far more important to the government than anything else, because the government is under enormous amount of pressure in Turkey from the military and secularist hardliners who would like to see it overthrown. So, you know, it's a very complicated chess game from that perspective.
The Senate is also likely to move forward with genocide legislation. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Leanne Caldwell.
From federal laws to local resolutions, communities around the country continue to clash over the issue of immigration. Recently, there have been some victories for those fighting to protect the rights of undocumented workers. But as Karen Miller reports, there are still many battles ahead.
A federal judge blocked a White House plan to send letters to more than 140,000 companies who had employees they said had questionable Social Security numbers. The judge said the action could cause, quote, irreparable harm to innocent workers and employers. Vic Walczak is a legal director for the American Civil Liberties Union.
Even when it comes to something like Social Security numbers, they found a very high error rate, which means that what you are likely to get is a lot of false positives and false negatives. So that means people who really are citizens, people who really have proper immigration status and have work authorization, will come out in that check as not being authorized to work.
Walczak says it's not just the federal government making mandates that curtail the rights of immigrants, but local governments as well.
Congress has created this void. And, you know, I think so long as the federal government doesn't exercise its responsibility, you're going to see these communities trying to come up with solutions of their own.
A power struggle is raging around the country. For example, in Prince William County, Virginia, officials created an ordinance that said police and county workers can check immigration status. Several Latino advocacy groups filed suit. Christina Sarchio's law firm is representing the groups.
Empowering police officers and county employees to basically not only check an individual's immigration status, but maintain the information and share the information. They were essentially carrying out the functions that Congress has reserved to the federal government.
Sarchio says local officials made another important violation when they created the ordinance standards.
And in coming up with those standards, the police department said that one of the things that they would be able to look at is, figuring out whether they were going to ask an individual what his immigration status is, one of the things that the police could look at is an individual's race, color, ethnicity, national origin.
Opponents of these ordinances say they promote racial profiling. Cesar Perales is president of the New York City-based Puerto Rican Legal Defense and Education Fund.
It's clear that they're not going to stop people who look like the white North American. They clearly are going to be looking for people that are foreign-looking. And increasingly, the focus is on Latinos. And so what you look like, what you sound like, open you up to a new kind of scrutiny, a scrutiny about whether you are in this country legally, asking people where they are from, asking them for identification. And this happens all over the place.
David Harris is a law professor at the University of Toledo. He says racial profiling is a serious detriment to keeping the peace.
The only way to have real, true, lasting public safety is through connection with the community. When local police begin to get these immigration mandates and when they start identifying people by how they look, those relationships that they have with the community are damaged because no community is going to trust the police when they believe and they see the police putting them under suspicion. The fact that certain people may not be illegal aliens really doesn't help the situation. It makes it worse.
There are currently several lawsuits pending around the country on local immigration ordinances. In previous cases, most of these laws have been ruled unconstitutional. For Free Speech Radio News in Washington, D.C., I'm Karen Miller.
Palmdale, California community leaders, parents, and youth led a rally in front of an Antelope Valley courthouse today to protest against what they call brutal and racist treatment of African-American students. Leilani Albano has more on the story.
Today's protest, which took place in front of the North District Antelope Valley Courthouse, located 40 miles from Los Angeles, is the latest in a series of actions since the September 18 incident at Knight High School in Palmdale, California. On that day, witnesses say a school security guard, Chris Niemeyer, broke the wrist of 16-year-old Plea J. Mervin after she refused to pick up pieces of cake from the cafeteria floor. Two other students and a parent were handed battery charges as a result of the melee.
That's an abuse of the justice system.
Eric Lee is chief executive officer of the Los Angeles branch of the SCLC, the Southern Christian Leadership Conference.
How can a security officer wrestle a 100-pound child to the point of breaking her wrist and then she be prosecuted for battery?
Knight High principal, Dr. Susan McDougall, did not return calls for an interview on the incident. The story of what has been dubbed the Palmdale Four has gained national prominence, with the Reverend Al Sharpton, SCLC President Charles Steele Jr., and most recently, Democratic presidential hopeful, Senator Barack Obama, lending their support for the students. Najee Ali, who is executive director of the L.A.-based Project Islamic Hope, spoke at a recent church gathering about the melee.
Our children come to school to be educated, not abused. And these white security guards, they're going to learn to stop breaking and body slamming our children.
While there is little empirical data tracking racial incidents in the school, parents say black students in Palmdale are regularly abused by campus authorities. Angela Williams, who is the mother of Kendula and Josh Lockett, the two other students charged in the incident, claims her son had a run-in with Niemeyer and Knight's head school security guard, Jeff Cohort, before the September 18 incident.
He put his arm around Joshua. Joshua asked him, please don't put your arm around me, you know, like that. You don't know me. Jeff told Joshua, I could put my arms around any one of these students I want to. Then they both got Josh's head, smashed it against the wall, and threw him on the ground.
Student Plea J. Mervin rejects suggestions that the fight was not racially motivated.
But it's a different race. They say that it's really not, you know, racism, but they don't know because they're not my color.
Antelope Valley's cheaper housing market and better schools are drawing an increasing number of Los Angeles African Americans and Latinos to the area. But while the recent arrivals are able to steer clear of many of LA's problems, activists say that blacks and Latino residents are encountering a different set of difficulties in the Antelope Valley, a reputed hotbed of white supremacist activities. Reverend K.W. Tulis is a community activist from South L.A.
You have the KKK and other organizations that's running rapidly within that neighborhood. You have cross burning.
As a result of the fight, all three of the students have dropped out of Knight High School and are now being homeschooled. Josh Lockett has been placed under house arrest because he was on probation at the time of the incident. Meanwhile, the families of the three charged youth have since formed a parents' union to help other African Americans in Antelope Valley cope with racial problems in their schools. Organizers are also holding a mass rally on November 19 in support of the Palmdale Four.
The mayor, city council, and any other elected official needs to step up and declare the type of attitudes and activities of racism, discrimination, declare it as being an injustice, as being wrong, as being a sin, and do something about it to stop it.
For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Leilani Albano in Los Angeles.
British education is undergoing radical change. Many teachers are protesting against what they see as backdoor privatization of state-funded education. In one London borough, some teachers and parents are doing a treehouse sit-in on the future site of a new private high school, and this direct action has achieved quite a bit of success. From London, Naomi Fowler reports.
One of Tony Blair's most controversial domestic policies was his plan for educational reform and what some see as privatisation of state high schools.
I don't say that in these 10 years our schools are everything they could or should be, but I do say they are a world away from where they were.
Blair's new policy invited private companies, religious institutions and individuals to manage state high schools. These sponsors contribute around $4 million towards the new school, and the government pays out $60 million of public money to build it. The building and land is then owned by these companies or private individuals through a trust. They no longer operate under local authority control. They can decide staff pay and conditions, and they're free to decide the curriculum. It's a scheme the government has been talking up since its inception.
For too long, these children were in schools which didn't expect enough of them, whose parents didn't have confidence in them, which didn't have the behaviour and the support in place to raise standards. They're beginning to achieve that.
Jackie Smith, former Minister for Schools, now Home Secretary.
Parents are very satisfied with the quality of education. These academies are massively oversubscribed. Standards are being raised in these academies, and they are not somehow or another sucking quality out of surrounding schools.
But that's just what they are doing, according to critics, and exam results from these new academy schools show no significant improvement. Hank Roberts from the National Union of Teachers believes the very future of locally accountable state-funded education is in danger.
We do not want, I'm afraid, either religious organisations or indeed private companies or private rich people having control of state education. What do they want to control it for? What's behind all this is the change from the community and our elected representatives and the elected government controlling the schools to individuals or individual companies controlling the schools, and that is the privatisation of the management of state education. We built them under the eyes of the local authority. The town hall you can see from there. We built all three of them, and all the neighbourhood knew.
Teachers and parents in this London borough of Brent were so concerned at plans to build a new academy school in their area, they occupied the site in tree houses. Progress on the building of the proposed academy school has now been delayed for a year and a half. One sponsor has dropped out. But Hank is expecting to have to move back into the trees again soon.
Education is a multi-billion pound business. And individual capitalists or individual private companies want to get their hands on those assets to be able long-term to make money out of them. It's not generosity. If they wanted to be generous, they can set up a foundation and they can give away all their money, and it would be very welcome indeed. But it's not philanthropy, I'm afraid.
There were hopes when Gordon Brown became Prime Minister that this controversial school academy policy might change. But parents and teachers opposed to this school academy in London are preparing to occupy these trees again. This is Naomi Fowler in Brent, London for Free Speech Radio News.
You've been listening to FSRN. I'm Jess Burns from Eugene, Oregon.